This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm so happy today. I have in the studio with me our own legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, and he's going to answer the questions. Thank you all for sending in questions for him about intellectual property. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Okay. Well, it's so good to have you back because I don't think we've really, we didn't have a chance to talk about the convention that was here in town, which was a big thing for you.
Yep.
All sorts of people from all over the place talking
all
about intellectual, all over the world, intellectual property.
Yes.
And they came here. That's exciting.
It's very exciting.
Did
Camp
you have
is
a good
growing.
Time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great time.
Okay. And you learned a lot. Stuff that you can help all of the listeners with?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, at the bottom of the hour, I am going to have a very interesting guest. His name is Vincent Manzo. And we're going to be talking about nuclear disarmament, armament, and all sorts of things about... it's just exciting. I'm so thrilled. I have not had anyone on to talk about intermediate range nuclear forces and stuff like that. So this is going to be fun. You know, Bill, and when I was reading about this whole, you know, treaty that we did in 1987, which did actually eliminate 2,692 nuclear ground nuclear weapons, in many ways, that isn't exactly what happens with all contracts. You have to have lots of stuff in there that covers everything.
That's right.
Because that did not cover that treaty. Very nice treaty. Everyone was so happy. But it didn't cover things like putting nuclear weapons on submarines.
Right.
They didn't do it then. Or even now, drones. So none of that is covered. And that's what happens when you don't have a lot of important things in a contract, right?
Yeah, I'll be interested to hear your next guest's talk about that issue.
Yeah, because this is a fascinating thing that, you know,
so we try to have a crystal ball as lawyers or diplomats when we negotiate contracts or treaties, but you can't always guess everything that is going to happen.
Well, I'm sure contracts that were Hemingway signed did not have in there anything about internet or digital copies or all of that, right?
And science is always in front of law, so law is always trying to catch up to science, and so... that's what happens in all technologies, and so we have to try to keep the law updated.
And for example, now we have all of these commercials where we have long dead actors and actresses, you know, singing in the rain or whatever, doing all these commercials.
Yes.
And it's just their digital image.
Yes.
And but they have managed to get their rights. The families are have the rights to these images.
They do, yeah. Right. So they're getting royalties.
So they're getting royalties.
Yes.
Okay, so that's good. Because that's the important thing. That's why all of you writers out there, you really need to go through a lawyer, because there are all these things that you might not even think about today.
But it could help your family later if the book becomes popular, let's say 50 years from now, which happens.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, who knew that, you know, we'd have Bogart walking around in a commercial, but today his grandchildren and great-grandchildren are benefiting from that. I'm sure he'd be very happy about that.
Right, and they're protected through copywriting and trademarking.
That's it. So that is the key, that you have to think about it. And it's true. I know books, and as a matter of fact, I'm thinking of one right now that I think is going to be coming back, that, you know, are long out of print, and then somebody reads it. Maybe a Reese Witherspoon reads it, and she says, oh, I like that book. I want to make a movie out of it. And then it comes back.
Right.
And you have to make sure that your intellectual property is secured properly.
Mm-hmm. That's
okay?
Correct.
Okay. Well, I had questions coming in today. And one of the top ones, there are, you know, authors are so often not business people. I mean, they love to write.
Correct.
They might come, you know, they have other jobs, but they just love to write.
Inventors are the same way. Artists, it's the right brain, left brain
thing. Right. And it's really hard sometimes for them to really focus in on the business side.
Yes.
Now, one of the questions I got was, how do you cover getting your royalties when you sign a deal either with a publisher or and if you have an agent, for example, does all the money go through the agent? Does the agent get the money first and then pay you?
It depends if you use an agent or not. Sometimes the agent will continue to collect royalties along with you. But your contract should require terms of accounting so that the author can, if they want to, go and look at the sales that are being made and to make sure that there's a proper accounting for royalties, because sometimes not all of the products that are sold are on the sheet, and you have to keep track of that.
Now, I mean, there are a lot of publishers out there. We have a few very big ones, but there are a lot of publishers who have maybe a stable of, you know, 50 to 100, 200 writers. They're not as big as the big New York companies, which have big accounting firms. Not that they are always honest, I will say, because Art Buchwald could tell you about Hollywood accounting, where he got accounts, and every account he got said, well, we lost money, so we, you know.
Now, I've represented a lot of clients who were entitled to royalties, and then during the lawsuit, when we would discover the information, we would find out that some of these companies were just failing to report them, accidentally, of course.
Oh, yes.
And a substantial amount of sales, so I guess they needed a better accounting department. So we have terms that we put in our royalty agreements for accounting so that we can go in and request those books, use an independent CPA to audit the books to see if the accounting is correct.
That's very important to have an independent CPA. Now, generally speaking, do you have any idea of is it up to the writer to say, I want my royalties paid every month, or does he the publisher say you get
everybody's
the
different. Everybody's different. Some people like to do it monthly. Some people like it quarterly. Sometimes they do it yearly.
Mm-hmm.
It depends the nature of the contract.
But it would be in the contract.
Yeah, so you would negotiate that in the contract. If you do it every month, that makes for more paperwork. That's the argument.
Uh-huh.
But it depends what type of sales you're making. If you have, in some industrial sales where maybe you'd only sell one or two products a year, that wouldn't make any sense to do monthly. But in cases where you're selling a lot of small items a day, then maybe monthly is a better way to do your accounting and receive your royalty checks.
And because, let's say there are starving writers out there who really would prefer to have it done monthly.
Right, a cash flow of money coming monthly. So it makes for a little bit more accounting and paperwork, administrative overhead for the publishers. So they like to do it like every 3 months or every 6 months because it cuts down on the overhead. But the author or the inventor, you know, usually wants their money monthly or quarterly.
At least.
At the worst.
Yeah, I wouldn't do
quarterly. Would probably be the one I see the most.
Because if you, you know, need to buy food that month, it really helps if you have that little extra. You might actually be able to buy, you know.
So that's just a point of negotiation when you negotiate your agreement.
And so let's say you're working with a publisher. The publisher cuts two checks, one for you, one for the agent, or they don't?
It depends on the nature.
Again,
they might all go to the agent, and then the agent pays the author. It depends on how you negotiate.
Okay, well, that was one of the questions that one of the listeners sent in, that working with a smaller publishing company, apparently the checks are going to the agent.
Yes. A good agent is not going to allow all the money go to the client and then hope the agent gets paid.
Oh, yeah. never goes
your
straight.
Your agent allows that. You need a new agent. So the agent is always going to be in between the publisher and the author or the recipient of the royalty to make sure he gets his cut.
Yeah.
Which is just good business.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing wrong with it.
Oh, yeah. You
business.
Can't because a writer might, you know, get paid and just say, oh, well.
Or take the position. You've earned enough. Why should you keep getting royalties? You know, you did your job. You got me in here, but, you know, you're not doing anything now. That's the argument.
Or I want to go to a fancy restaurant this month, and so I'm not going to pay you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It will never.
So, for a lot of agents, it's not just one and done.
Yeah.
Right? It's an ongoing process where the agent is continuing to work. And the agent could make any money if they just got one small paycheck to get you in the door, and then they're, you know, thrown
but
aside.
But in general, I would say that not to do it for more than a quarter, because there was a case recently where, with a big agency, there was some embezzlement, and when it came to paying out the royalties.
The money wasn't there.
It wasn't there at all.
And so that can happen, and that's why you have to keep an eye on it and have a process. A lot now you can use computers to see, to check in, to see how many products are going out the door, so you can keep an eye on it from, you know, point of sale position. So there's things you can use to keep track of how much is being sold, so you make sure you get your correct royalty.
But all of this should be in the contract.
Everything has to be in the contract. If it's not in writing, it doesn't exist.
Okay. Everybody listen. Really, really. I know so often a writer is very excited to get any contract, to get any sales.
Yes.
They will just sign the contract that is sent to them.
Yes.
Without having any clue of the process.
And that can come back to haunt you, particularly if you hit it over the fence and it becomes very popular and you've given up your rights to derivative works, like if a movie or a screenplay or a spinoff or a, you know,
That's absolutely, yeah, I mean.
So yeah, there's a lot of very special magic words that have to be in there.
Yes.
Or you lose your rights.
And I particularly, I'm talking to a lot of you authors of picture books. This is so important.
Mm-hmm.
It is so vital. I do have an author who's written a lovely, lovely picture book, but he doesn't want to talk too much about it. Mm-hmm. I think maybe
your publisher, but then you may have contracts with your artists or your graphic artists are providing. You may have contracts with editors or others who are assisting you. So it's not just one contract. There's going to be a series of contracts with everybody you're working with. And if you're working with folks and you're working on a handshake deal, then the potential for risk is higher because the judge won't know what the deal is. Once it's in paper, that's considered the deal. That is the deal. There's nothing else. That's why we put it in writing. But if it's not in writing, then anybody can argue anything. And everybody sees history in a different light, mostly in their favor. So when it comes to the argument in court later, if you don't have it in writing, then you're probably going to not prevail to the extent that you should if you have it in writing.
Yeah.
So.
And because you don't know, as Bill said here, you don't know. It could be 50 years before your book takes off, you're long gone, mm-hmm. and then somebody comes along and says, gee, that would make that book and those characters would make a great video game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Marilyn Monroe, Elvis. Think about the millions and millions and millions of dollars being generated since their death.
Yes, it's true.
To their family. And there's been a lot of famous books over the years where they sold some when the author was alive, but then picked up later in the family.
Like The Hobbit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other one's Mein Kampf by Hitler.
Oh. Yeah, well,
he became extremely wealthy from the sales of those books, and his relatives did also afterwards. It just expired. The copyright just expired recently.
Oh, I didn't know that anyone was still getting. Well, I didn't know anyone was still getting money from that horrible book.
Yeah, it's a really crazy legal story about the copyrights in Mein Kampf.
Why didn't we take it away? I mean, couldn't when we won the war, we couldn't just say, that's it?
Nope.
You have no right?
No, because we have the freedom of speech. So even though the speech in the book is horrific and horrible, we can't preclude it. We can't stop it.
Well,
the copyright went on, and they continued to fight over the royalties for years on that book.
Well.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
One of the most awful books ever written.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. I had no idea someone was benefiting from that book.
Yep.
They had no right to benefit as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, it's part of this whole...
It's part of the law.
Yeah, and there have been some changes.
There's been changes, again, because of the changes in science. So, you know, we now have digital publishing, you know, so that's changed. And we have new laws in the copyrights about, you know, what you can and can't do on the internet concerning other people's works.
Well, so murderers on death row, they have rights...
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I think that goes by state law. But I think there are laws that say that you can't commit a horrific crime and then benefit from it. So you can't go out and, you know, be a serial killer and then write a great book from prison and get rich in prison or get your family rich. So I think I'm not 100% sure of that particular issue, but I think that would go state by state.
Okay.
I think they have laws in Florida that say that you can't
benefit
profit from a crime, particularly horrific crimes. Now, you see people all the time come out and do financial crimes and then write books, you know, and so they seem to kind of get away with it. But I think if you have, like, you know, murder and stuff like that, or rape, and you're not going to be allowed to profit
to
from
profit
that.
From it. I don't know. Did Madoff write a book? I didn't read it. If he did, so.
I watch the show American Greed all the time. I think it's just crazy. You know?
Yeah.
And I see some of those people, I think, come out afterwards and write books about what happened and how it happened. The Wolf of Wall Street, right? There was
one
there.
Oh yes, that's right.
Okay, big financial crime, and then.
And then so
book and a
then
movie.
People have to do civil lawsuits against them to.
If they can,
try
yeah,
to claw
try
back
to,
some
yeah.
some of the stuff. Okay,
it's
well,
crazy world out there.
It is. Well, that's why you need to have a lawyer, because before you get yourself in trouble. And one of the questions that was sent in to me was, we have some people who, I don't know, they think of things. They think of things. Now, let's talk a little bit about Gutenberg Project books.
Yes.
Because a listener wrote in to me, and she describes, she said, She wrote a very long email to me, and the essence was that she doesn't understand all that gobbledygook at the end of the Gutenberg Project, where they have they put all the text of books.
Yeah, all public domain works.
Public domain works, and they put the and then there's a bunch of long couple of pages of information there about rights. What does it mean? What does that gobbledygook mean? Because I guess it's sort of important.
Yeah, well, the Project Gutenberg was not set up for profit. It's a nonprofit organization.
Sort of like Wiki.
Yeah, and they accept donations. And then they started a long time ago, back in the 70s, slowly getting these books, digitizing and putting them out there for people to download for free.
And now?
Because the books are in public domain, you can use them. You can download them, and you can...
You have no obligation. Doesn't at the end of in that gobbledygook, don't they ask you to give them some money?
Yeah, they ask for a donation. I don't know particularly which language she was referring to in her email question, but from my review of Gutenberg, you're allowed to download those works because they're public domain.
And they don't have any rights because they did the work.
No, because they're just the words are in the public domain, so they don't have any independent right to them.
Okay.
Now, if they wanted to, they could get them and they could sell them to you if that's what they wanted to do as a business model. But that would just be from a standpoint of making it easy for you, so you purchase it rather than requiring you to purchase it because it's copyrighted. Once it's public domain, it's anybody can use the information.
Okay. Well, she wasn't sure if they had a right because they're the ones who actually put the words in. Although the words don't belong to them.
Right.
So she was thinking that if that was true, then she would retype all the words in. And I said to her, if it's like War and Peace, it's got a lot of typing to do.
It would. So, it's a tough question. We always start with the default setting of no, we can't do it, and then we go from there. And so it would take some research to determine exactly what she wants to do, how she wants to receive the information from the Gutenberg Project, and how she would use it. So it takes a little bit of analysis to answer the question.
Most people, if they're taking from Gutenberg, they can take it down.
You can download it, or you can just read it from the cloud.
Yeah.
They have 58,000.
It's somehow Gutenberg's on the mind. I think because of the idea that many things have expired.
Yeah.
Copyright. So,
right. It's all public domain works.
Public domain.
And every day more works are entering the public domain. And when they do, Project Gutenberg's going to publish them on their site.
So if a work is in public domain, so this is a question. Somebody wants to take a book that's in public domain. It's not a very famous book, but wants to modernize it.
Yes.
They want to take, essentially, it sounds to me like this is a guy who wrote, he wants to take the book. And he wants to change the names and the location from England to America.
Right.
So he's actually going to change the names of the towns, use similar, somewhere up, up near Boston or something where the scenery is the same. So he doesn't have to do too much. This is, in a way, it's...
And you're allowed to do it.
Yeah, and he's allowed to do it.
Of course,
And he can change the names of the characters.
Yeah, it's public domain work, so you can take that and create a derivative work out of it, okay? It means that you're using it as a basis, right, a foundation to create something new. And then you could potentially get rights in what you create as new.
And he doesn't have to say, I mean, we'll take, for example, a book like I Know Very Well. If he took Jane Eyre, which I would kill him if he did that, but he took Jane Eyre and he moved her over here to America, mm-hmm. changed the name of...
I think that's more from a business perspective that, you know, if you tried to say that, this is all original to me and I didn't use that other work and it's clear from what you read that it was taken from that other work, then I think that's more of a business problem, a perception problem, but, optics problem, rather than a legal problem.
Well, the thing is, I can tell you, if somebody does, you know, because I read so much, I have so many books that are on Gutenberg. It's funny, I can go through there and I can say, I read that, because when I was young, when I started in the children's room at reading at McGregor Public Library, I started at the A's, and I went all the way around the room. I read mm-hmm. every book. And if I got a book today where somebody did that, changed just the name of the town and the people, mm-hmm. but the rest was, I mean, I would go crazy because I know that book.
Right. You know. So it's just a revamping. So it's done a lot, okay? Particularly we do it in the movies, right? We do it a lot in music, right? all the great scores from Mozart and Beethoven, that's all public domain. But if the Philadelphia Orchestra plays that and creates a sound recording, they can copyright the sound recording. Not the underlying work, but their sound recording. So it's not unusual that we take things from the past and redo them.
So there's no requirement to say where you got it from or give any credit to anybody.
Once it's in the public domain, you're not required to legally say that. No, nothing. No. If it's copyrighted, then you have to get permission, and then you have to give attribution.
Okay. Now, another question. Are there legal requirements of what you put on the front of a book, what you have to put, the name, your name? And
If it's copyrighted, you have copyright notice, the C in the circle, the date it was published, and the name of the owner, author, or person. But that's the only requirement for copyright.
Well, okay. Well, people out there, I actually suggest you write your own book. Don't take somebody's book. Just, you know, and definitely don't take, like, the librarian in California who took a book that somebody wrote in 2014, which was published actually, this in one case, it was published like in around Christmas in 2014. And this woman, a librarian, can you believe it? A librarian actually took the same book, changed the word, changed the names of the characters.
Left, and
at the end of each of every other chapter or something, she added a little sex scene mm-hmm. for the characters. That was not in the original, because the original was written by a very nice lady who didn't know about this kind of stuff. And she just added, and that was it.
Yeah, so that would be a plagiarism, and that would be a copyright violation.
Yeah, and
but,
also,
you know, how many times has Romeo and Juliet been revamped and modernized and use those same...
So people can do this.
You can do it. Yeah, you can do it. Yeah.
Oh, what the heck. People, get out there and think on your own and write something new. That's what we need.
You're creative and original.
Create an original and then come to Bill Larson of Larson & Larson because he knows his intellectual property.
Thank you.
Because you are a member of. Tell us what you are a member of.
AIPLA, which is the largest intellectual property association in the world.
Okay, and how can people get a hold of you?
LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Okay, so give Bill a call. Check out his webpage. He's got all the copyright stuff.
We'll help you with your contracts.
Yes, and he helped me with my patents. And we have some more things happening on that end, too. So it's really exciting. I have 4 patents. Is that nice?
That's right.
That's nice. Yes. And Bill's people are absolutely fantastic. They know patents, that's for sure. So, again, Bill, thank you so much for coming in today.
My pleasure.
And it was just a joy to see both of you, and because you brought your wife. Always, it's so nice that she comes in here and sits. That's great. Okay, so we'll have you back next month, and we'll talk more. And
yes.
I have some more questions. I didn't have time for everything, but
okay.
we'll
get them next month.
Okay?
Keep the questions coming.
Okay, thanks again, Bill. Nice to see you. We're going to go to commercial, and then I'm coming back and talking about nuclear wars and bombs and I don't know what. Going to have fun. Okay. Thanks.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper. And I am just waiting for my next guest. This is going to be fun. I have not had such an exciting guest forever. This is just wonderful. I'm just waiting now to talk to Vincent Manzo. Hi, Vincent. Are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Wow. You're there and I'm here, and it's nice to talk to you, Vincent. This is exciting. I tell you, I want to ask you a very serious question, Vincent.
Sure.
Do you sleep at night? With all the things that are in your head and all the things you know about nuclear weapons and the whole state of the world, I don't know how you sleep. It's just unbelievable. You are quite amazing. I have to tell people that, you are, when I got this interview, I said, this is so exciting because it's a subject that I've been interested in for a long time. And I wanted to have this opportunity to talk to you because let's talk about CNA, which is the group that you work for, a little bit. And it's funny, I read about how they started, and I live here on the Gulf of Mexico, where we had a lot of U-boats during World War II, and that's how CNA started.
Yes, that's providing an analysis to help the United States deal with that threat, absolutely.
So this is a very, very big organization that you belong to, and in general, let's just, first of all, explain a little bit about CNA, which is CNA Analysis and Solutions, and I guess your little message to people is nobody gets closer to the people, to the data, and to the problem. Wow, that's why I'm wondering how you sleep at night, because you are like in the midst of this amazingly difficult situation where we are talking about pulling out of treaties or going into treaties, and you know all about it.
Well, and I occasionally do wake up thinking about it. But I think, like many national security issues, they're daunting and they're serious, but if we give them sufficient study and thought and preparation, we can hopefully identify policy options that give the United States and the world the best chances of dealing with them in a way that reduces the danger and keeps as many of us as safe as possible. Absolutely.
Well, CNA. So CNA is a very big organization. You have 500 people, and you have and you deal with all sorts of things. But this whole nuclear weapons policy area is so important. And I was thinking about it. I was thinking, now, if we, you know, the problem is when you say your company gets closer to people, the problem is, are you getting close to the right people? Because if I went anywhere and tap people on the shoulder, nobody knows about this. I mean, virtually nobody knows what is happening in the field of nuclear weapons here and the dangers that are involved. For example, let's just start. How many nuclear weapons do we have today?
So the under the New START Treaty, the United States has can have roughly 700 deployed missiles and bombers that carry nuclear weapons, long-range missiles and bombers, and 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads. So that's the limit that under which the United States and Russia have to come under the Strategic Nuclear Arms Control Treaty.
So we have that exact number, each of us, more or less.
I wouldn't say it fluctuates a little bit, but both countries are under those limits.
Okay. And this treaty, which is the New START Treaty, right, expires in 2021.
Yes.
And we are supposed to do something. Now, the problem is, this is a problem. We have all of these places that are supposed to give us news and supposed to keep us informed, and nobody explains any of this. Nobody tells us really. About the whole thing, what it all means. So, how will you tell the ordinary public what we're facing here?
Sure. So, absolutely. So, right now, as you said, we have a treaty that will expire in February 2021. Both countries can agree to extend the treaty for an additional 5 years out until 2026. But eventually the treaty will expire either in 2021, 2026, or sometime in between. And so the question becomes, what might we put in place after that? Can we reach an agreement on another treaty? And there are some big obstacles both countries would have to overcome in order to do that, because they have some disagreements about what another treaty should cover. Russia would like to see another treaty cover defensive systems, so missile defense. But the United States isn't agreeing to that at the moment. And the United States would like to see another treaty cover shorter-range nuclear weapons in Europe, because Russia has a lot of them. They're not covered by any arms control agreements, and currently Russia disagrees with that. So there is a potential that we may have a period of time where there is no nuclear arms control treaty between the United States and Russia. And so that's what we looked at in the study we have just released, which is available to the public, and anyone who cares to can visit the CNA website and go ahead and download it and read it if they so choose.
But few people will understand it, because it's real. I mean, there are how many of you people in the United States, how many of you people really, what are there, 5,000, 10,000 people who completely understand this thing?
Yeah, people who kind of professionally are committed to doing this type of work, I don't know if I could give you an exact number, but it is a small number relative to the number of people in the country. Absolutely.
So,
and part of what our job is to do is, I think, is to try and go out and explain it to the public and explain the different policy choices, the different options, the different risks associated with different options. I think that's a very important part of what we should be doing.
Well, CNA is, I mean, I'm glad that they put you out there to start talking to people and getting into the media. Now, hopefully, you know, our problem is we have a media that is stuck in stupidity, because they cover things that just boggle the mind. I mean, I don't care if almond milk is better than cow's milk for the environment. I really don't care. We're talking nuclear weapons. We should all get together and just say, okay, let's send Vincent out there on every station every day for the next year to explain to people how dangerous the world is.
Well, and I'm happy to talk to as many people as I can, and I think part of what we expect from the United States and Russia is to cooperate to reduce suspicion and fear, and to find some common ground in trying to reduce the risks of nuclear conflict and nuclear arms competitions. And I think that's a reasonable expectation we should all have, and certainly a fair question for anyone in the leadership of the U.S. government is to sort of explain their thinking and what they think we should do on that issue.
Yeah, but nobody is doing it. I'm sorry. Nobody is doing it. I think, you should have like a spot on television where you are. Really, I'm telling you, the networks have to listen. We're talking something serious here. This has been going on. I don't know what since what's his name? That's McNamara. Since McNamara, we have a lot. He has a lot that we could hold against him. His whole idea that we can just have nuclear weapons all over the place and they'll never catch up to us. Well, yeah, they caught up to us, right?
And that's one of the roles of arms control is to help give both countries confidence that they can set a limit on their forces, and that the other country will they're in the treaty with will also abide by the limit, and they have a verification regime to help give us confidence that they're doing so. So that is something that we have a long tradition of doing with between the United States and the Soviet Union and now Russia, and something that hopefully we can continue to do, even if it looks different than it did in the past. We might have to change how we approach it. Because of how the world is changing, but we can continue to cooperate to reduce suspicion and fear, absolutely.
And that's only one part of it, too. Russia is only one part of it. First, it would be nice if we could get the two of us together, but apparently we can't get even together over a bowl of borscht. So how are we going to convince these people in our government? Because, I mean, that's what... CNA coming out with analysis and solutions. How do you convince these people? Sit down to the borscht. Let's have a little vodka and let's just say we don't need all of these nuclear weapons. One nuclear weapon is too many, but we certainly don't need thousands of them deployed all over the place. And we don't need. And this only covers the New START. It covers ground missiles. Ground only, or does it cover the submarine ones and the?
So it covers ground-based missiles. It covers missiles launched from submarines, and it covers the bombers, the airplanes that can carry them. But it doesn't cover. It covers ones that can go at intercontinental ranges, so can travel between the United States and Russia. Doesn't cover the shorter range.
And it does. So, Does it cover drones? Does it cover drones?
Well. Currently, neither country is deploying nuclear weapons on drones. But that's part of continuing to do arms control is so that we have some kind of venue and framework to work out these new technologies that might come online and find some kind of cooperative path to limit or avoid developing them in the first place, at least with nuclear weapons. And to answer your question, what I think this report does is kind of lay out in a clear way what some of the risks that the United States would face if we aren't able to get another arms control treaty with Russia, and if we don't cooperate at all on nuclear arms control. And so that's really what we tried to do was say, okay, well, what does this treaty do in a granular way, and what happens if you lose it, and particularly what happens if you no longer have this verification regime that gives you great insight into Russian nuclear forces. So my hope is that the general public and policymakers will be able to look at this report and see what the risks are and what the stakes are for these set of decisions that are coming up.
Okay, let's look at this. We need to make a deal with Russia. Do they feel the same need to make a deal with us?
So I think Russia is interested in continuing to have some type of arms control. They've expressed a willingness to extend the New START treaty, and the challenge for both countries is going to be to show strong leadership and come together and find common ground where we can we can agree on how to reduce risks moving forward.
Now,
certainly, I think the potential is there.
Have you been to Russia many times?
I've been to Russia once on when I was doing research for this project.
Okay.
So I've been working on nuclear weapons for roughly a decade. It was my first trip to Russia.
Okay. Did you find that they trust us?
Oh, I think it depends on who you talk to there. Certainly, there's a high degree of mistrust and suspicion in U.S.-Russian relations now, and I think we have to be clear-eyed that there are, you know, Russia's done some really troubling things in the last decade, and there are areas where we are going to disagree and where the United States does need to continue to maintain sufficient military capabilities to deter Russian aggression against the United States and our allies. But again, because nuclear weapons are so destructive, we also have some shared interest in trying to cooperate to manage the dangers from nuclear weapons as well.
So, as of today, there's just one nuclear arms control treaty in place between the United States, right? And Russia.
Between the United States and Russia,
and it's called New START. The idea is that we should sign on for another 5 years. During that time, would we have a reduction in arms? Is that part of the New Deal, that we're, what, at 1,500 or something? Are we going to go down to 1,000? Or
The current treaty would not require us to do so. That would, the United States or Russia could perhaps agree to do that outside of a treaty, or the United States could conceivably choose to do it on its own. Those are all options available. But what extending the treaty does do is it continues a limit so that neither country can legally increase up beyond 1,550 deployed nuclear warheads. So it's more about, I think, preventing increases, which both countries have the capacity to do so, than bringing us down to a lower level. However, I think another treaty would be an opportunity potentially to set a lower limit, or at least keep a limit in place into the future.
So ideally, we should really negotiate a treaty that says, okay, let's go down to 1,000.
That's been the goal, and that's something that the Obama administration tried to do. Russia was uninterested, I think in part because of what I said earlier. They would like to see missile defenses included in another treaty and don't want to include shorter-range nuclear weapons. But certainly that's trying to find a creative way out over through that impasse to another round of reductions would be valuable. And I think to extend the New START treaty, you have more time to figure that out.
Okay, well, I just think that, you know, I hope that they send you out all over the place to every network, every place, so that you can talk, because you have an enormously difficult situation, and I hope that you don't have too many sleepless nights, or I would probably start drinking bourbon myself, but... Yeah.
Every now and then. Yeah.
I think so. I do want to thank CNA for, you know, arranging this interview, because I love to talk about something serious, because it is actually much more important than so many of the nonsensical things that we are now discussing in our, you know, in our big news 24-hour news cycle. And very few people are talking about what you're talking about. So good luck. And maybe what you should do so that you get more publicity, you write a book, write a novel, okay?
Okay. It's definitely a goal someday.
Okay. And then you can come back to Joy on Paper and we'll talk about it. And I just want to thank you again. And thanks, CNA. Good luck, okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Wow, Vincent Manzo, wow, what a job. I don't know how he does it. Just looking at these numbers, and this is frightening. And this is why, you know, all of us really do have a responsibility to talk, to send messages, whatever, to these news networks and just say, enough with it, enough with the stupidity. It's fine to know about a lot of these things, but when it comes to this nuclear situation, most people don't realize how really, really terrible it is. Not only do Russia and America have this 1,500 or so nuclear weapons. Britain has nuclear weapons. France has nuclear weapons. And we're not even going to talk about India and Pakistan. And we're not addressing this problem of saying, okay, let us just knock it off already. Get together and say we don't need all these nuclear weapons. And really, one is too many. And to have all of these people with nuclear weapons, and as you see governments change and you don't know who's in charge one day or the next, so it would be nice if we could all get together and just knock it off already, because it's really frightening. In the world that we're giving our kids, it's, you know, what are we going to be doing if we're not going to solve this problem now? And so I really hope that people really contact some of these, whichever your favorite news organization. I don't know if you're liberal, if you're progressive, if you're Republican, if you're conservative. Say, let's talk about serious problems. And in the next presidential campaign, knock it off with all these little side issues and talk about really important things like nuclear weapons. And I was really happy that I got to talk to somebody from CNA, because they were responsible for researching the U-boat situation in World War II, and that's how they started, as a bunch of MIT guys. So it's a fascinating organization. You can go to their website at CNA and read more about it if you can understand it. In a way, if you can understand it, it'll frighten you even more, because it is frightening to see the statistics and the numbers and to see how terribly confused everybody is. They all have all of these ideas, but none of them get together and none of them say, okay, we're going to stop this already. You know, it's 2019, and this new start is supposed to last till 2025. But that's just around the corner. You know, it wasn't too long ago we were all going crazy about the turn of the century. And 1999, everyone was going crazy. What's going to happen in the year 2000? Well, now we're headed towards 2025, and we still haven't accomplished anything that we were supposed to accomplish. And I don't quote Richard Nixon every day, but it is funny. When Robert McNamara, was talking about, oh, that's okay, we can have as many nuclear weapons as we want because they'll never catch up to us. You know, Russia's behind the times, and China, we didn't even think could do it. He was wrong. And at that time, Richard Nixon made a statement which is so apropos to the times and to this occasion. And he said, the nuclear umbrella in NATO is a lot of crap. It is simply baloney. There is no such thing as good nuclear weapons. And so Richard Nixon, he did a lot of bad things, but on nuclear weapons, he was right. And it is a lot of phony baloney. So we really have to address that problem. So meanwhile, we are here and we are having fun writing. And I think that this Vincent Manzo should actually write a book. Maybe people would then pay attention. And that does happen. You know, sometimes somebody will write a book and catch the attention of people, and people will start thinking about a subject. And so maybe that's the way. That is the power of writing, and that is the power of having a book, being an author, because you can write about things that are important and relative to the current situation, and that can open people's mind and get people thinking about a subject. It's, you know, it's like the Grapes of Wrath. All of these books that came out that you think at the time they're just novels or just books, but they open people's eyes to problems. And so I'm hoping that Vincent will come back one day soon and with a novel, and perhaps he will get all of us thinking about how to solve this whole nuclear arms race problem. And meanwhile, I want to again thank people for celebrating my fourth anniversary. Particularly, I want to thank Carol J. Perry. She's going to be back here in the fall with a new book. This is exciting. She doesn't stop. She is like an Energizer Bunny. She just keeps working and working and having lots of fun writing. So I'm really grateful to her. She sent me a lovely card today, and I just want to thank her so much for it. I really appreciate everything she does for me. And I hope that, she's just an amazing person. And I really want her to be on the Hallmark Channel because I am so tired of reruns. I mean, I do like Jessica Fletcher. But please, we need something new already. If I see one more, I'm going to go crazy. And I would love to see Carol J. Perry's books turned into a really fun series. She has wonderful characters and wonderful storylines. So you never know. It all depends on what you do, if you're willing to get out there and start writing. I wrote my novel in November, NaNoWriMo. It was lots of fun, and I wrote it 50,000 words in a month. There are some summer workshops for all of you out there, so check out NaNoWriMo and see if there's a workshop in your area that you can join and start thinking about writing this summer. Summer is a wonderful time for those of you who are off. And also, all of you parents out there, encourage your children to write a book during the summer. Say, let's do this as a project. It could be a family project. You could write your family story. And I'm going to be talking to David Baldacci next week, who encourages young people to write a book, because it's a way to start. You learn so much of life just by writing, getting your words down. And so I hope that I'll talk to him about that next week. I have also a wonderful new author on. I'm really excited. Oh, and I have another professor. I've been really having fun. I've been getting all these smart people lately. It's a really daunting, you know, when I get all these people from Cambridge. And next week I have from Princeton Dr. Robert Castor. He is an expert on Roman history. And so it's really exciting that he's going to be on. Anyway, meanwhile, remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're really, really lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a streaming video, Hallmark special, or something like that. And it's up to you. You have to write. And meanwhile, again, say something nice to somebody today. Find your joy and share it. And always find at least one person that you can say something nice to every single day. Or if you can't see them in person, send them a letter, send them an email. And I will say thank you to Big Ed in the control room, because he's always so nice to me. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And I wish I had been a general. Okay, bye-bye. Have a great weekend.